The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. Still to come on the show, Drew Densick will join us. Talk football, tennis, anything that's on his mind. Get Drew for three, I think, today, if I'm not mistaken. Jeff Parles will join us later. He's got season-long NFL and college football thoughts. And Joe Sheehan on Major League Baseball is going to join us here before the show is over. Thanks to Mark Borchard, by the way, for doing the Q3 derivatives with us. Always a fun exercise. We get tweets beating the book. GV, New Jersey, New York. Question for Borchard. Oh, sorry, I missed him now. Says, I know he's mentioned he's high on Philly before. I watch that team every night. Pythag has them 6 wins luckier than what their record should be. The bullpen outside of Duran is eclectic. Is there something I'm missing from the advanced stats that he sees? Meaning you think you don't buy that the fact they're going to regress, I think is what you're saying. I'll pass that on to Borchard. But yeah, Pythag, keep in mind, is just a reflection of what has already happened, right? Runs produced, runs allowed. It is in no way a reflection. It is no way predictive moving forward, Pythag. It's just a commentary on what's happened, as is sequencing, by the way. It's just a question of that. But yeah, well, I'll pass that on to Borchard. He'll give you a more thorough answer. Auburnist, thinking about the tennis rules, would not scoring when someone withdraws encourage match fixing? I'm not sure what not scoring means there. Also, what is the stated reason for not scoring? We're just talking about what I was talking about earlier was just betting results and grading. Not sure. I need a clarification because you're saying, is it like baseball run line rules where it was started because a bookie didn't want to pay? By the way, match fixing is always something that is levied against this player. I don't know about always, but oftentimes levied against players who make a very sort of late withdrawal from matches. But there's all kinds of ways to fix tennis matches, not just that way, right? Tanking sets, particular games, it's a whole thing. Eric Biggio, our buddy from William Hill Caesars. Love the baseball betting show. Thank you both. On regression candidates for pitchers like Erod, they don't have sexy numbers or lights out stuff, but they know how to pitch. John Tudor, Jamie Moyer come to mind. Does that give you pause to fading them, or you just trust the numbers? I actually passed this on to Borchard before he left air, Eric, and he goes, did you trust Jamie Moyer when he came on the mound? The actual answer from Borchard is he always trusts the numbers, which is exactly what I would expect him to say. Jesse Welch, the over 9.5 on Sharifs on today's show, cashed easy winner right away in the first hour. And Freedom, Kyle Manship, 5. I heard you talk about Sharif, the tennis player, earlier, and now, once again, I'm singing Sharif Don't Like It and Can't Stop. A little bit of Sharif yesterday, a little bit of Sharif today. I wonder if Drew knew that those were the lyrics to The Clash's Rock the Casbah. Drew Densick joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Drew, I want to wow you with a couple things right here. I want to wow you. Drew Densick, by the way, the co-host of the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. Are you familiar with the 1982 smash by the Clash called Rock the Casbah? Are you familiar with that song?
I'm very, very, very familiar with it, yes.
Okay. In that song, who, Drew, quote, don't like it in the chorus?
I don't know. I can't come up with the lyrics off the top of my head. Who don't like it?
I was shocked that it was Sharif. All these years, 44 years, I thought it was Charlene, don't like it. I am an idiot. This we talked about yesterday on the show.
Yeah. There are a bunch of that era songs that all have that same kind of style that I was, I'm sure when I listened to them, I like first, like that was like, on, you know, you're a DC guy.
Yes, sir.
I grew up in DC, riding around with my dad in his Toyota Celica, yes. 1981 Toyota Celica. We would rock DC 101.
DC 101, with the Grease Man.
With the Grease Man. Yeah, that's right. And yeah, they played that style of music all the time. And I know I was singing along completely made up words that were not close to the lyrics. Back kids don't appreciate it, Gil. You couldn't pull up like azlyrics.com or whatever back in the day and know exactly what they were saying. You just had to guess.
Yes.
And the British invasion, in general, I'm sure I was just making up whatever. So yeah, Charlene instead of Sharif. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Maya Sharif came out. It was a whole thing. Drew, we should just go through DC radio stations in the mid 80s when we for the rest of the hour. So this is the other thing.
The one that really shaped me as a human was WHFS. Oh. That might have been after your time.
No, I remember WHFS.
Swept in and really kind of delivered some of the best alt rock in the 90s that was all paradigm shaping for me as a youth, and went to a couple HF festivals at RFK. And first concert I ever went to was an HF festival at RFK. No Doubt played just off of their release of Orange County.
Yeah.
The big brass band, and they were like the eighth headliner. Like they were way down, middle of the day. They threw No Doubt out there in the sun with the brass band, and they tore the roof down. Garbage played. The Foo Fighters were there. Foo Fighters, obviously, Dave Grohl was a local hero, so they were the most well embraced of any of the bands that played. And Foo Fighters, I would still say, is probably my favorite band based on that experience alone. They were incredible. That was right before they released Color in the Shape, and they were amazing.
I'm
forgetting
everybody.
Like 10 other ones, yeah. but Bush played, Presidents of the United States, Goldfinger, the Gin Blossoms. We could go on and on, but anyway.
Poor out of 40 for RFK. It makes me weep. I saw the Jackson's Victory tour there, and so many years ago at RFK.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So this and this, I want to just segue into. By the way, we have a report from Ian Rappaport. This on the Breece Hall injury. Aaron Glenn telling reporters that Breece Hall will be out 2 to 3 weeks, but will be ready for week 1. So good news for the New York Jetropolitans. It could have been worse, as they say. Drew, I wanted to show you this from earlier. We'll segue into tennis first, and we'll get to football. But I wanted to show you this that I was putting out earlier because I had a segment to go through some like really nerdy tennis stuff. And I'm curious if you do this. This is me separated because I was on Sarana Cristea yesterday. Kalinskaya walks off the court at 5-love in the third set. So I don't, at some books, I don't, yeah, dude, it's an epidemic. By the way, I didn't make this point. If I go back to like 2023 with my spreadsheets on these, so I've sorted out all the matches where a withdrawal took place. And you'll see the score, right? I have the score at the time of the withdrawal. This just happens to be the 2026 thus far. So this is 8 units. Now I'm making a subjective, I was about to win this. I was about to lose this, right? When you get close, because then some of the ones in the middle, I don't count, right? I put them up at 0. But I was saying last year, I actually got the best of it by several units in terms of withdrawals. The year before that, I got the worst of it by just over a unit and a half. This year, I have gotten the worst of it by almost 9, by over 8 units. In other words, have gone against me. And but one of the things that, this just jogged my memory. If I go back to 2023 and I'm still betting hundreds of matches, there were only 4 withdrawals, right? So this has become that clearly by my betting numbers, the mathematical chances of it somehow leaping from 4 of these matches to now, 2025 in a year, this has become an epidemic. Can anything be done about this? Anything?
I want to say this is either somehow variance or something about your process must be making this. You must be identifying players, you must be identifying favorites who are somehow vulnerable to just giving up and withdrawing.
I'm betting the dog and the favorite is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like you must have, there must be something about your process where you're incorporating more of this. A couple of those look like, you question whether you quit betting like the AL of 405. God,
I wanted to kill myself. Yes.
There's a couple of those on that list. I had a funny interaction with Andy. I don't know if you knew this about Andy, but probably 6 years ago, he was bored in the off season and started making college hoops numbers for mid majors only. And he would only bet dogs off of his numbers for college basketball. I never really kind of interrogated what exactly his process was, but there were just a couple of like kind of uncaptured statistics that were really helping dogs in the mid majors. And he would just bet those dogs. And the proportion of dogs, he took the points every time. the proportion of dogs that went to overtime and then lost and didn't cover was just brutal. Impossibly large. And it was like, how are you picking teams that are keeping it that close throughout regulation and then can't cover in overtime? It was ridiculous. He had somewhere it was like plus 10. He had 10 points in his pocket, and then they would lose overtime 11-0. And that it was
that's the numerical. Yeah. That's the quantifiable numerical corroboration of Matt Eumanns's comment, which he always makes, which is overtime where dogs go to die.
Dogs go to die. Yeah, absolutely. And it was like you're saying, where you actually run the numbers on it, and it was like, this is statistically impossible that you could have had this many overtime losers on teams that, because like, The regulation is telling you that yes, there was value on the dog.
Yes,
and you yet made you still a good ended bet. Up losing.
Yeah,
you made a good bet. Yeah,
you made a great bet in some cases, and it still doesn't matter. And then there's the and then there's the superstition that follows from that, which is, because I've said this specifically with college basketball. I remember being on, to use your example, on Wisconsin. This is like 5-6 years ago. Can't remember who they were playing. They were like an 8.5-point favorite. I was on the favorite. I was on the other side of that, right? I had no business winning it. It goes to overtime. I win. I always feel like, I'm curious about, I always feel like when I win something I'm not supposed to win, what follows is an unbelievable run of greatness. And the opposite is true, too. When I lose something I'm not supposed to lose, oh my God, here comes hell.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. That you gamble long enough and you identify those patterns and I guess I just can't win. Like you made a great bet. You got incredible closing line value.
Boys and
game
girls,
state was in your favor the whole time and then right out the window.
No one said this was easy. I don't remember that ever being said on the show. Drew's tennis thoughts, if he has any plays today, his U.S. Open thoughts, his NFL thoughts, that's next on A Numbers Game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
College football season is almost here, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. Loser. Get the VSiN College Football Guide free with VSiN Pro. It has previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. That's not all. VSiN Pro also gets you the NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year and save 50% with the VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. We're getting a little nerdy, a little granular here today with the betting stuff. Hope everybody enjoys it. For me, this is how the podcast used to be, right? When I wasn't a hamster on a wheel doing shows every single day, I got to like really talk betting and nothing else but betting. But I'm curious about this question. This is a great question from the Auburnist, and Drew Dinsick is kind enough to hang out with us this hour. And I'll actually bring you in for this, Drew. This is from the Auburnist. He says, he's clarifying what he was saying earlier. He says, sorry, I was talking about the books not grading the bet. He was using the word scoring, and it sounded funny. He goes, wouldn't the books want a decision on these? Is it good for them scoring it a push instead of scoring it for whoever is ahead when the withdrawal happens? So this is a great question, and I'll bring you in for this, because what he's asking is, so there's shops that only require one set to be finished, and then they pay you out whoever advances. But of the shops, the old school shops that require the entire match to be graded, he's asking, and I guess what he's asking, I'll rephrase it by saying, what's the reasoning for them having that rule and sticking with that rule?
Yeah, this is kind of a new thing that's come about. Well, back in the day when I started betting tennis, it was almost every book was one set must be finished and then we'll grade the money line. And my guess is that the kind of tendency to move to void everything unless the match is completed is because they had some customer it's just a kind of a customer experience decision, right? Like to your point, to the point of the question, it's in the advantage of the house to grade any market, to get to have an outcome. It's their advantage. They don't want to be voiding bets. That's not good for the house. But the fact that they are voiding those, and my guess is that it's because they are voiding the handicap. They are voiding the set correct scores. They are voiding the totals. And so grading the money, you know, grading the outcome, the money line outcome, and voiding everything else, I think they probably were just kind of making some customers unhappy. And so they elected to just void everything, is my guess.
That's as good of an answer as any, I would think. I think you're probably right. Yeah.
And
I'll give you an example. By the way, for those wondering, which are the shops that require full grading, Bookmaker Offshore Stalwart requires full match to be played. Who's the shop here that also MGM is one set, I believe. Caesars is a full grade, if I'm not mistaken. One of those is a full grade. I think it's Caesars that requires the full match. I could be wrong about that. But up until recently, they were that way, as I recall. Yeah. So anyway, there's places that are still full.
My guess is it's a customer service thing. The online help agents got tired of answering angry questions about why did you void my over that was already home, but you graded my money line a loser. Yes, that's kind of, that'll, I think, get that's old. Probably.
That'll get old real quick. Do you have any tennis in Cincinnati today for us?
I do. I like Medvedev a lot against Nakashima.
That's
a good matchup for him. Yeah. Medvedev, I laid the game and a half. I think he covers the handicap there. I like -136 too. My fair price there is -158. Nothing against Nakashima. He played great in Montreal, but these conditions and the matchup style, in my opinion, solid favorite to Medvedev there.
Mostly
chalk popped on my card today. I have a decent edge on Musetti over Michael Zhang. I think that the best way in, I got in at -179. It's -197 now. I think I would lay the 2.5 games over laying -197. So I would still look for Musetti to come through 2-0 against Michael Zhang. Again, nothing against Zhang, a solid player. I like Tiafo versus Lerner Tien. That is still available at plus money at a couple spots. And then tomorrow, I'm going against my guy, Archer Fease, and I'm going to back a player that I absolutely hate in Alex Demonauer. But Demonauer being +152 right now is kind of crazy. That should be way closer to 50-50. And I think a couple of, tweak a couple of things in your model, I could convince myself Demonauer should be a small favorite there, and he's at +152. So gonna go with Demonauer tomorrow and look for some daylight against Fease.
Glad to hear you're on Medvedev. That is my only tennis play in Cincinnati.
Oh, you got a good price.
Is Medvedev. This is overnight for VSiN subscribers. Last night, -128 versus Brandon Nakashima. I saw -133 when I first started the show this morning. But this reminds me of a match a couple days ago when Felix Auger-Aliassime was taking on Stefanos Tsitsipas. Now some of that had to do with Felix hadn't played in a long time, hadn't played since Wimbledon, I don't think. But it's sort of like Auger-Aliassime was this very small favorite, just like Medvedev here's against Nakashima. Again, nothing against Nakashima, who just got to his first 1,000 final in Toronto. Nothing against Tsitsipas, who's having a bit of a career resurgence. But it's like, have we gotten to the point where we're so recency biased that we really think Medvedev shouldn't be a bigger favorite against Nakashima today, and Felix shouldn't have been a bigger favorite against Tsitsipas the other day? Yeah. So reminds me of that.
The Felix, it's a good call. The Felix one was interesting because because he skipped Canada, I think people were convinced there was something wrong.
That's right. That's right. His home country.
Because it was a little bit of a, you could have won Canada. You would have been the top seed, right? I mean, second seed, I guess, after Zverev. But Zverev clearly wasn't playing for anything there. So, he presumably passed up the chance at the Coupe Roger or Rogers Cup. Then we're in Montreal, so it would have been the Coupe Roger.
And it was Montreal. He's a Quebec guy, I believe,
Exactly. He's a French-Canadian. So, he him passing up on that, I think people people just assumed. But I tell you what, both Felix and Medvedev, I think, are interesting right now as you look at the board for the U.S. Open broadly. I would really love to see both guys pick up a little bit of steam here. Neither one is especially, kind of ground down by the fatigue of the season to this point. If they can put some form together going into U.S. Open, they'll both be pretty interesting if they can land in, quarters that are not Sinner quarters. Obviously, we still haven't gotten confirmation that Sinner's going to play the U.S. Open. We haven't gotten confirmation on Alcaraz either. I expect both men will play.
Feels like it.
But feels like it. The guys in like the Zverev, Shelton, Djokovic, Hodar, Fritz tier, I think are all a little short right now in terms of their price. Felix and Medvedev at 35-1 are both players to watch, that in particular Medvedev, like his skill set is, perfectly tuned for a hard court speed like Cincinnati, should also be able to carry that into Flushing Meadows. It's in general, this is his time of the calendar where he really tends to pop a little bit because he's not as ground down by the clay and grass because he just doesn't make deep runs in those tournaments. And so, he's getting towards the end of where we're going to consider him a realistic contender at any tournament. But I really hope Medvedev puts a little bit of form together here going into the USO.
Medvedev's one slam title here at the U.S. Open. Jannik Sinner minus 140, Carlitos plus 260. You expect one of them to win.
Didn't he win the Australian Open, Gil? I remember him up 2-0, and he was up a break in the third. I'm pretty sure he got that across the finish line, right?
Checking.
Oh, no. Didn't he happen. Lost to Nadal.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Sinner's winning this, though, you think? Sinner?
I think so, yeah. I actually got some close to 50%-ish at some of the PMs. My number's close to 62. Alcaraz, actually the real fun one, I got a bunch of Alcaraz will play, which I'm excited about. Yeah. That was in like the 40s at one point after he pulled out of Cincinnati, I think. That dipped down into the 40s. I got filled a bunch of Alcaraz will play. So
just will
I just
he play or will he
up.
Will he not play? Oh, he's playing.
Will he show up? Yeah, basically. Yeah. Is he playing. Showing up? Yeah.
That video,
did you see his kit?
That video J-Rod sent us? He's playing.
Yeah. Did you see his kit?
No. Good.
He's got like a New York Knicks kit.
Oh, smart.
It's like the sleeve. It's like the sleeveless. How he likes the sleeveless tops. It's full on New York Knicks inspired.
Last thing on tennis, because we'll get to football after the break. Ladies, say it with me, Drew. Who's your girl?
Iga's live. She's live. Is that what you were hoping for? Real quick on the women's. Is this awesome that we have gone through the cycle, and it feels like there's like because Andreeva won the French and Noskova won the Wimbledon. There's like a lot of mission has not been accomplished. We have not gotten what we wanted out of this season from Iga, from Sabalenka, for Goff, Osaka, Pagula, like a bunch of really, really good women who I think are coming into this tournament with like a prerogative, and that's going to make it fun.
Can't wait. Drew, Zach, and I will do the U.S. Open pod coming up. More with Drew on football next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget about the sharp plays, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, and alerts directly from the pros. You could scan the QR code on your screen for more. sharpplays.com. Bonus Drew Dinsick today on this Tuesday, a third and final segment with Drew. You can follow Drew again on Twitter, whale_capper. The Deep Dive is the podcast he does with Andy Molitor. That is Dinsick Classic, and then Bet the Edge, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. Sorry I missed you and Andy at Bet Bash. I know a good time was had by all. You guys are going to be here for the contest weekend at Circa, the two of you?
Yes. The spacing worked out perfectly. We had two weekends between Bet Bash and contest signup weekend, so get two trips to the desert, which is
nice.
Flat out awesome.
Nice. Let's talk football. You and Andy are now how many teams through the 32 NFL teams on the Deep Dive?
We are on division number 6 of 8. We are doing the AFC West. We're doing the AFC West this week, and all that's left is the AFC NFC South. We've saved the worst for last. The NFC West, AFC West have just been super fun to talk about, and the picture is coming into focus, I think.
So let me just ask this randomly. What do you recall in the 6 divisions you've done thus far, or 5 plus, the biggest disagreement on a team that you and Andy have had and the biggest agreement you've had?
Early on, we were not on the same page with a couple of teams, but I think as we've gained more, gathered more information, made some adjustments, we've kind of come closer together. The biggest surprise was Andy was over market on the Steelers, and I was under market on the Steelers, and so I'm going to hang that over his head all season long. Every time he doesn't bet the Steelers in a given week, I'm going to try to interrogate why didn't you bet the Steelers? I thought you were over market on this team. Why didn't you bet them? Maybe they meet expectations, I don't know why, but beyond just like the rating of the players and coming up with a fair for them, I feel like the change from a Mike Tomlin led team to a Mike McCarthy led team is going to have some negative implications for their for their production, for their wins. I worry a bit that under Tomlin, the focus was very straightforward. Get to 9 wins. Like, if we get to the playoffs, great. If not, who cares? We got to get to 9 wins. That's what mattered. If we win a playoff game, who cares? We got to get to 9 wins. And now, generally that grind of, kind of making that making that number now turning over to a new regime where that's not the priority. I think you could have a little bit of let your guard down during the regular season. And frankly, I don't think the schedule, I don't think the quarterback play we saw from Aaron Rodgers affords them a lot of grace in terms of getting to 9 wins this year. Aaron Rodgers, if you kind of missed the key kind of outcomes of the Aaron Rodgers experience in 2025, he was getting the ball out of his hands at an absurdly quick rate because of the fact that he did not want to get hit. And when he went up against a violent pass rush that could generate quick pressure, he was extremely ineffective. A lot of throwaways, a lot of wasted downs, and a lot of inefficient offense. This was no better illustrated than the final 2 games of Aaron Rodgers' season, where he went up against the Baltimore Ravens with the chance to clinch a playoff spot. The Baltimore Ravens had a completely toothless pass rush last year. They could not generate long pressures, let alone quick pressures, by the time we got to January. And Aaron Rodgers was comfortable in the second half, delivered some obscenely good passes, in the comfortable confines of a clean pocket, and was able to get that team barely across the finish line thanks to the missed field goal at the end of regulation by the Ravens. And then the next week, as a short favorite, I believe, against the Texans of all teams, he was a sitting duck and was completely unable to overcome the very, very strong pass rush that the Texans brought to town. And now, C.J. Stroud was awful in that game. Didn't matter. Aaron Rodgers was not winning a contest against that pass rush. And as I look across this year's schedule, a handful of relatively strong pass rushes that I think are really going to dictate some tough days for Aaron Rodgers in particular, the Bengals, the Browns, and the Ravens, all with much stronger pass rushes coming into this season. I think it's going to be tough for the Steelers to find more than 2 wins in division. I think just in general, this feels like a 5-7 win team to me. And not that I have a problem with Aaron Rodgers, but I will not be sad if his going away party is a bit of a funeral.
Yeah, I'm right on the page with you for both the Steelers prognosis and the Aaron Rodgers sentiment there at the end. What about you and Andy in terms of agreement? Was there one team where you guys were just piling on in terms of good or bad?
Yesterday, I mean, we're both in the same camp of how in the world are the Broncos the third choice in the AFC West?
Meaning they should be one, perhaps.
Yeah, probably. I have them first. It's a funny wrinkle because we both came in with our fair ratings over market for the Broncos. We both have them favored in a neutral setting to win the AFC West. But when you look at the schedule sequencing, five of their first six games, they are 2.5 point dogs. Period.
Wow.
Like, it's very, very strange that it's exactly 2.5, five out of six. And that's so amazing, you got to take, you kind of have to make a call on the Broncos now, which is they're going to win half or more of those, you know, those games where they're 2.5 point dogs. And if they do, then the schedule softens up a big time as they go into the middle portion of the season.
Yeah, just for the radio people, at Chiefs, home Jags, home Rams, at Niners, at Chargers, home Seahawks, and then it softens up.
Yeah, yeah. They are favored against the Jaguars. The other five games in their first 6 weeks, they are plus 2.5 in every game right now. And so, damn, you know, if the truck plays out and they are 1-5, you know, any bet you make preseason is going to be wildly underwater. And so you kind of have the opportunity to be patient and hope that the number doesn't run away from you. But if they beat the Chiefs, Monday Night Football, if they beat the Chargers, and then they win one of Rams, Niners, Seahawks, this is now all of a sudden a 4-2 or 3-3 team going into the stretch where you have a lot of advantages. And, you know, then they're talking about, you know, 13, 14 wins again. And so I think it's going to be one where you're just going to have to take a stand and bet it one way or wait and then just live with the idea that you might miss out entirely on a good price for the Broncos. Andy has already bet them to win the AFC, which I was a little surprised and I didn't agree with, just because I feel like the Broncos set up as an awesome regular season team, and I'm not convinced that you're going to get the quality of play that you need out of Bo Nix and company to win two or three playoff games. But he's taken a stand already, and essentially the die is cast for Andy and the Broncos. I'm right around the same number for him, but I haven't taken any action yet. So to me, the Broncos are an interesting defense because they're rostered extremely, this is one of the best, most talented, I would say that maybe the most talented coverage unit in football. They have an awesome pass rush. They're decent run stop, and they should be a top five defense pretty clearly. They have a top one or two offensive line, if healthy. And so there's not really a lot of reasons to doubt that they're going to be able to put together winning football. For me, the question is really, can they stop elite running teams? They lose Jonathan Franklin Myers, who was a huge part of their run stop last year. I feel like the really elite running teams on their schedule are going to give them a tough time. Like Rams week three is probably a great test for them. If the Rams come into that game and they're able to, kind of play a little bit of keep away and really put the defense in a tough spot, I could see Rams winning that one pretty comfortably. But there's not a lot of elite rushing teams on their schedule, particularly in the back half of the year, but they're going to run into one in the playoffs, right? They're going to run into a Ravens. They're going to run into a Bills type of team in the playoffs at some stage. And I feel like that's probably where it ends for them. So I'm going to get a little squirrely rather than play like AFC at 15-1. I think I'm going to play like a couple of exact results, like eliminated in the playoffs at the divisional stage or in the conference championship.
Man, once we start talking football, everything else goes out the window. It's just your juices started flowing. It's amazing. Before you go here, we have 60 seconds. Anything week two preseason that still exists?
Ooh, I'm mostly going to try to find some angles into the who wins practices. I think the one that I have circled most sincerely right now is the Patriots Eagles joint practices. The JPs, I think, give you a little bit of signal when one team consistently wins these joint practices. They go into that when you go into the week two game. The loser of the practices has a little bit of an axe to grind, a little bit of jobs not finished, and you get a little bit more effort, a little bit more sharpness and focus out of that team. And the other team's like, mission accomplished. We don't really care what happens in this game. So looking for some effort imbalance based on lopsided joint practice outcomes. So excited for that.
It's a Googling contest. You got to research. You got to figure out who looks good and who does not look good in practices, joint practices. Drew, thank you so much. Appreciate it all, man.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. It's Gil Alexander. Solo today. Kelly on vacation. He will be back on Monday, assuming all goes well in Nashville. We assume he'll be back and he'll be fine. Won't be hungover or anything. Matt Brown actually joining me for one more day this week. Tomorrow, later this week, Thursday, Crack, of course, Bill Krakenberger in studio. Also on Thursday, Warren Sharp joining the show. We believe we'll get confirmation from Warren on that. Friday, Fez on the show as well. On Friday, who am I forgetting? Somebody else on Friday. Paul Carr. Oh, here's the thing. Thursday, Friday, Danny and I were like, hey, wait, what? Because we just got off the World Cup, and so our soccer minds are still, you know, with the World Cup in the rear view. But Paul Carr letting us know, hey, Premier League, let's do season longs. Let's do first weekend picks. The Premier League is already back. So Paul Carr will give all his season longs on Thursday. He'll do his picks on Friday. Looking forward to having him here later in the week. We get tweets at Beating the Book. James, the James Lloyd, please tell me the lyrics to Yellow Ledbetter. I can play it on guitar, but I have no clue what the blank he is saying. I'm not even familiar. WD 40 plus rocking shoe. Gil, heard you talking about the Rock the Casbah lyrics on the show. It's Sharif. Don't like it. No, I know. And it's a whole story. We get it. It's Sharif. I once knew a girl who thought Beast of Burden was I'll never be your big suburban. We all have one. It's awesome. Scrabble Star. That's the Rolling Stones, right? Scrabble Star. Biscayne Dog 74. Final word on this. Final word on this. A discarded set of lyrics by The Clash. Oh, I see what you did here. He said, Sharif had to pull out Rock Gil's bankroll. Rock Gil's bankroll. Thank you so much. They're the best listeners ever. Coming up with lyrics to songs. You think The Clash knew this was going to be applied to tennis bets 44 years later? I wonder. Mark Gupta. Hey, Gil, on your tennis bad beat numbers, have you had any repeat offenders? Oh, this is a phenomenal question. And I don't have the answer to this. Anecdotally, if I think about it in time, has somebody screwed me by walking off the court late on multiple occasions? There are certain players, right? You may have met, one of the ones was the Maya Sharif one where Paula Badosa walked off right before. And by the way, let me just aside because I was using the terms interchangeably and I shouldn't. Nicholas Griggs points out a walkover technically, right, is before the match even starts. So we're not talking about walkovers. That's Kelly and I, the joke about, you know, the Allen Iverson walking over Tyronn Lue and that players should be made to lay down and person physically walk over them. Retirements are what we're talking about. So thank you for that clarification, Nico Griggs. I don't want to use them interchangeably. Retirements are the things we're talking about. But to answer your question, Mark Gupta, are there repeat offenders to this? You know, like the Paula Badosas of the world who walked off the court versus Sharif. She's a culprit, but she usually has the decency to withdraw before the match ever starts. I don't know that she is a recidivist, to use the criminal term for repeat offenders. I don't think she's a recidivist on walking off the court in the middle of the match. The girl the lady who we were the culprit of yesterday, Anna Kalinskaya, who took her toys and went home down 5 love. You can't just play 4 more points. You can't just let her score 4 more points and just give her this. Forget our bets, right? I understand. We're betting and we're self-centered about it. But allow your opponent the dignity of the complete match, right? You can't just let her play out 4 more points, let her ace you 4 times or whatever. Anyway, Anna Kalinskaya is now on the radar because I heard yesterday this is her 8th retirement here in a couple years' time. So that is buyer beware. So I do have to, yes, it is now incumbent. I can't believe we're at this point now, because as I mentioned in 2023, in my entire spreadsheet, there's only 4 retirements in the entire season. And then you see it's like blossomed over the last 3 years to 20, and now 25 of them, and like who knows how many this year. So this is becoming an epidemic. And so Kalinskaya, you are now on the radar for not having the decency to withdraw before the match, but actually to not allow matches during to reach their conclusion. So it's sad that you have to keep that list going. Great question, though. Haji, I thought it was Cherie. Don't like it. And it's been 44 years. Not sure how I feel about it now. I'm going to just repeat this because people are like, what is all this Rock the Casbah? this happened because my brother started singing it. The song came on. He said Sharif. I'm like, what are you talking about? He says, oh, yeah, it's Sharif. I was like, I thought it was Charlene all these 44 years. I said Charlene. Chrissy Andrews, who I texted immediately, he says, oh, I thought it was, he said Shireen or something like that. Or Joe Pita said Shireen. Chrissy said Cherie. Anyway, more people got it wrong than good, except for listeners of this show, who apparently are all geniuses and all knew it was Sharif. And Sharif makes sense, right? Because the song is about a fictional king, Sharif, who wasn't appreciating the kids playing their rock and roll, if you know what I mean. Let's see. Any value in Carlitos, Shrek, any value in Carlitos 3-1 U.S. Open, even if he hasn't played, he will be tuned by the time he makes the semis, assuming he does. Yeah, look, it's either Sinner or Alcaraz. It's not that complicated on the men's side. Everybody else is super great, but it's still those two guys. Even a hampered Carlos or a we don't know what he's going to be like Carlos, so I understand the point. But Yannick Sinner, still the rightful favorite. Is there value at 3-1? No, but if it gets any higher than that, there's value. You're getting there. Plus 350, 4-1, then you're talking absolutely value on that. And Jason H11, don't forget Elton John's iconic song, Tony Danza. That's right. Tiny Dancer made famous, Tony Danza made famous by, was it Lisa Kudrow as Phoebe in Friends? Was that an episode, I believe, where she misread it as Tony Danza, Tiny Dancer, and they called her on it? That's an outstanding one. And Eagle Marine letting us know that in terms of tennis grading, the score, if anybody who bets at the score, if you're betting tennis, this is awesome. Formerly ESPN. They treat tennis retirements like this. Match winner. Okay. So match winners bets are void if your player retires after the first set. The match winner bets win if your player advances due to retirement after one set. Okay. So basically they give the player the best of it either way. All right. Good job, the score. I don't know how much they're letting you bet at the score. That's a whole nother story, but at least they have favorable rules in favor of the player on both sides of that. Anyway, best listeners in the game. Y'all are awesome. Appreciate all the tweets. Jeff Parle still to come on the show here. Joe Sheehan's going to join us for baseball. Joe's got a bunch of picks for baseball today, and Jeff has a bunch of season longs in both college football and pro football. He's got a bunch of thoughts really for both as well, in addition to bets that he's made. Couple things. One, just riffing off what Drew said in the previous segment, I am directionally with him on both of the teams that he was talking about. Pittsburgh Steelers under. I finally feel, and I'm not like Kelly who does this every year, so I don't want to be accused of that, but I do think this is the year where they fall under their season win total. Again, Aaron Rodgers is going to be 43 years old in December. I do not expect that team to be competitive this year at the top of that division. I know we've said it at least once or twice before, and it hasn't happened, but I do think that's a thing. I want to follow up more, though, on the Denver Broncos note from Drew, because he and Andy Molitor talking about they can't believe the Broncos are sort of slotted as third in the AFC West with Kansas City and the Chargers ahead of them. I'm sort of coming around to that as well. Again, with the Chargers, in the Chargers case, it is simply the schedule is brutality, right? After the first two games, it is a gauntlet. And say what you will about the Chargers, but I don't think anybody would be shocked if they didn't meet some of the expectations of the market. The schedule is ridiculous. Kansas City, we said yesterday with Matt Brown, it's the first year last year where Patrick Mahomes, you didn't see him put on the cape and just come to the rescue. And so I don't know what we can expect with the Chiefs. I do think the Kenneth Walker pickup is huge for him behind him in the backfield. I think that's sort of an undervalued thing, but there's a lot more question marks with the Chiefs for me than there is certainties. The Broncos, I'll just go through some of the notes again about the Broncos. Last year, 14-3, they were 11-2 in one score contest. So I get it. There's going to probably be some regression on one score contest. But they helped themselves out with Jalen Waddle because Bo Nix's numbers over the middle were bad. Jalen Waddle makes his hay over the middle. That's great. The defense, though, is the key to it all. And as long as you have Nick Bonito and Patrick Surtain manning the middle, manning the back end, this is going to just be a stay-the-course defense. And I just want to say, with all the stuff about the one-score games regressing to the mean, let's talk about something that is likely to see positive regression, and that's takeaways. They fell, the Broncos did, from 26 in 2023 to 25 takeaways in 2024, and then just 14 last year in 2025. So that, for all the people talking about the one score stuff, you got to have a full picture. Throw in the takeaway stuff, which is just as likely to regress as a one score thing is, and it sort of balances that out. So don't let anybody sort of talk you in to the one score things like they successfully did or they correctly did with the Chiefs going from 2024 and then regressing horribly in one score games in 2025. There's a bigger picture when it comes to the Denver Broncos. Joe Sheehan on baseball, Jeff Parles on football. It's next. It's a Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.